This is the Band School Podcast, where we talk about business, adventure, and mission with your host, Buddy Rathmel.
Welcome to the Band School Podcast. I'm Buddy Rathmel, here with Bonnie Truax, a friend for about 30 years, who has traveled the world and is currently an author and learning that that's a whole nother business in and of itself. But we're going to dive into a lot of things in Bonnie's life and also talk about the book that she has coming up. And I think it'll be a really interesting podcast for those of you that are longtime listeners of the Band School Podcast. So Bonnie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, buddy. I'm excited to be here and see you again.
Yeah.
Such a long time.
Yeah, super fun. So this is the first time we've seen each other in person in
a couple decades.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. In a few decades. We lived in the same place after college, but you guys have been traveling the world the last 8 years after achieving financial independence. So what put the desire in you for financial independence, and then how did you achieve it?
I actually don't know that anything put the desire in me. It wasn't something we were shooting for.
Okay.
I followed principles I learned as a kid. You live below your means, you save. And we were saving. I don't know that I knew the concept of financial independence before suddenly one day we were. So we had saved and our corporate jobs changed drastically. And we felt at some point, this is a waste of our time. We're not helping anybody. Let's make a change. And we looked at our finances and said, we don't have to go back to work. So we took off.
Nice.
So it kind of happened without, we didn't plan for it.
Yeah.
In the sense of that was our goal.
Yeah. What are some of the things that, you know, I think most people would love to be able to retire at 43. What are some of the things for you that have been, that have kind of changed in your focus with having this time and life freedom? Like either, you know, a mindset shift or just something that you've enjoyed that's been a surprise, or what are some of those changes in your guys' lives?
I think one of the big changes is I'm a very type A personality. I love goal settings and go for that goal,
yeah,
whatever it takes. And once we left corporate and this huge list of action items, and we just took off with our backpacks to start traveling, it was an entirely different world. And while I was in corporate, every moment had to be productive.
Yeah.
I have 5 minutes here. I can listen to part of my podcast, or I can get this done or do that done. And then you come home Friday so exhausted, you watch a movie and fall asleep halfway through or whatever.
Yeah.
On the road, I had time to actually think and process life.
Yeah.
And we set reasonable to-do lists, like 2 or 3 items that we could get done that day.
Yeah.
And it was an entirely different shift in mindset. And what I learned from that is I think that I put goals ahead of purpose.
Hmm.
And I think that that's very common in Western culture, is we set these goals and we go for those goals and we forget the purpose.
Yeah.
And in this lifestyle, we were able to put the purpose first.
Yeah.
And set goals towards that. But the purpose always comes first.
Yeah.
And it was a major, it might sound like shifting words, but it was a major change.
Yeah.
On figuring out that, yeah, so many things we set goals on don't matter.
Yeah. So. And what would you say is your main driving purpose now?
I want to inspire others to be free.
Yeah.
Both, it started out with, I wrote some things on financial freedom.
Yeah.
And that's a nice thing,
yeah.
But really where we can truly be free is spiritually.
Yeah.
And if someone is looking for spiritual freedom, I want to be able to help with that.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. I know your blog, 43bluedoors.com, mm-hmm, is largely about financial freedom and how you guys achieve that, travel, how others could experience travel and some of the ways that people can get there and that kind of thing. I know, you know, we were part of a faith-based ministry for 22 and a half years and then came back and started a business. And it was weird. We went like the other direction in some ways, where it was like purpose was very clear for a lot of those years. And my goal was in 12 months to be financially free with my business. Like most businesses, it's taking longer than 12 months. But we were able, after about a year and a half, to spend 2 months in Germany filling in at a ministry, but still chasing that piece of like, okay, we do want our lives to bend back towards purpose. But right now, the main purpose is quickly try to build up some wealth to be able to be free and serve or travel or, you know, do those kind of things. What have you found as far as like with financial independence and then having freedom and then maybe able to pursue a little bit more fulfillment? What have you found how that's changed your own life as you've had this freedom and now are able to think a little bit more about what's most fulfilling? And
well, having the freedom to think and just be rather than do. One of it is I found my creativity. When we first hit the road, I still needed some type of deadline. I mean, I had so many deadlines before. It's such a drastic change. So my deadline was to do a blog post every week. And they started out horrible. I was used to corporate writing.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. Here's the bullet points. Here's a solution, you know.
Yeah.
That's a boring blog. So I learned to write. I learned my creativity. And at first, our goal was just to maybe volunteer in every country. And what it turned into is now my drive is writing books. I find I'm loving it.
Cool.
And that's how I want to share what has made me free.
Yeah.
And maybe others can glean, something in there that resonates with them.
Yeah.
So
when we were talking before, you talked a little bit about simplicity, connection, some of those things that you learned along the journey. Talk to me about that. Like, what do you mean by those? How has it impacted you?
I think everybody's heard of Marie Kondo or whatever, you know, let things go. And I always knew that. But when we sold our big house and went down to just a backpack,
yeah,
then I was like, wow, it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
We're with our backpack and I don't have a junk drawer to clean. I don't have those baseboards to dust. I don't have to go upstairs to those bathrooms we never use and flush the toilet to make sure they don't dry. Like all these things, just none of that is cluttering your brain.
Yeah.
It's not just the stuff in your house. It's cluttering your brain.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking about it. You're taking care of it. You're buying insurance for it. All that stuff.
Yeah.
When all that's gone, I was shocked at how much freedom it gave me to just think about other things and enjoy where I was completely.
Yeah.
It gave me the freedom. I wasn't sitting there with a friend talking like, oh, I've got a meeting in 5 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
I could sit there and we could talk as late into the night as we wanted.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
That's really cool. Jen and I spent 2 months living in a VW bus. And I remember thinking like, if everything we owned, and even at the time we had an apartment building, we had one of the apartments, we had an attic, a 4-car garage. So like even then we had a lot of stuff, but I kind of pretended we only had what was in the bus, you know. And even, you know, we just spent 2 months in Europe. We forgot about everything here. Like, I think all the bills were paid. We came back. It's still our house. So I think everything got paid while we were gone. But we didn't even have to think about it while we were gone. And I do think there is something to that of like, how can you orchestrate your life? We actually sold everything before we moved back here to the States 2.5 years ago, came back just with suitcases. And now we have a whole garage full of tools and a shed with tools and another shed with tools. And, you know, this house filled up with stuff.
It accumulates fast.
It is insane how fast it accumulates.
We still have to go through our backpacks and weed it out because they start getting heavy. So it accumulates. No matter what you have to put it in, it fills up.
So what do you guys travel with now? You just have a car and a few backpacks and a suitcase?
Well, while we're here in the States, we have a car so we can carry a few more things. So it suddenly gets bigger.
Yeah.
but when we're on the road, when we go back to Europe, we're going back in May. We'll just have a backpack each.
Yeah.
And just everything that we own, we want to be able to carry. Now, we do have a box, a few things of sentimental things in my parents' basement things like that. But that's not something we think about when we're on the road.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure I could tell you what all is there.
Right. Totally. That's awesome. Super, super neat. So, you have talked about, like, you work for this Fortune 50, you know, you had careers. What was some of the challenges in leaving that? Was there anything about identity or security of money or any of those things were difficult in making the leap?
As far as security of money, it hadn't even ever crossed my mind to retire early before we actually did.
Yeah.
So we did go to a financial advisor and we're like, are we crazy? And he's like, no, you can definitely do it.
Yeah.
So that was, and after that, I don't think we've worried really about money. And, but as far as identity, that was something I definitely had to think about, because it's so easy to, especially here in America, oh, what do? You know, oh, you're director, you're this or that.
Yeah.
And that had become my identity.
Yeah.
And so now you're on the road. Oh, who are you? Vagabond? Like, who are you?
Yeah.
And I had to, I don't think it was a major thing, but it was definitely something that I had to think about. That was part of the difficulty of letting go.
Yeah.
Because Trin was ready. My husband was ready before me. And I was still hanging on. And then just that last really bad day at work, I'm like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. So for someone that is stuck, but wants to pursue either freedom or financial freedom or any of those things, what would you say to somebody that's stuck in corporate life and wants to break free?
Well, one thing I see a lot of is people telling me how much they just, they're so tired of their job. They're exhausted. They're not getting fulfillment out of it. And they work there continually. Another, I see them 5 years later and they're still there. I'm like, leave.
Yeah.
Even if you have to go to another job. I think it's just, you just have to do it.
Yeah.
And maybe try to picture your life in a different way. When I had that bad day that I told you about, that was the last straw, I came home and I was just, and Trent just looked at me, he goes, we have to do this. I immediately felt relief.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Yeah.
So I had something that propelled me there, and that was helpful. And we just had to do it. The other thing is, you can always go back and get another job if you don't like it.
Right.
Yeah. Totally. If you go, and that was part of our thing. Well, let's try it. If we don't like it, come back and get another job.
Yeah.
So just try it. I've met too many people who waited so long, they regretted not being able to do all the things they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So
I say that to people all the time, like in coaching engagements, just make an experiment, like have an experiment, see if this works. Like, that's what I said to Jen, let's go to Germany and this will be an experiment. Can we do this? And like my business did suffer a little bit, you know, while we were there. And I thought if I was just giving clients great results, that was enough. But like, I realized like they also need to really feel special and I need to be connecting with them and touch points. And, but it was an experiment, you know, and now I'm like, okay, we can't leave again for 2 months, until I have other people in my business to be able to do that. And so I actually looked, I wanted to go to Burundi in Africa this summer. And, I was like, nope, I'm not going to do that. Like, 2025 is all about growing the business, and it is going to mean some sacrifices this year for hopefully some freedom and opportunity to do that in the future. And I'm hoping by July 1 to bring somebody else that's client facing, and a year from now in January of 26 to be able to be like, okay, we can do this again and travel or whatever. But
you bring up a good point though. You don't just, oh, I want to travel, let's go do it, and not have, like, you're doing the things now to get there.
Yeah.
And I say there was one day we decided to do it, but for years we saved. We didn't know that that's what we were saving for. Mm-hmm. For college, I wanted to get out debt free and I sacrificed to do that. I had holes in the bottom of my shoes. I wore the same clothes the whole time. Like,
yeah,
I was going to get out debt free. So you do, there are times, there's seasons in life.
Yeah.
And there are times you sacrifice to get to something so that you can do something else. And I think that's an important point.
Yeah.
You have to do that too.
Yeah. So how is your, you know, we both went to a Christian college back in the day. How has faith guided you on this journey that you've been on?
You know, I think it's one of the reasons why I left corporate is while I was at corporate, I loved what I did and I had wonderful people that I worked with. And for many years, I felt like we worked together and I could actually produce value. I was helping other people. It was fulfilling because I was helping somebody.
Yeah.
And when that stopped, when corporate changed and everyone was just building their own empire and what we were doing was, I felt it was useless. That was what propelled me because I don't even have time to volunteer. I don't have time to do anything good. That's pointless.
Yeah.
And so that I think helped me. There's been seasons in life where it's gone up and down and, you know, it looked like I was far from the faith or in other times back, but I never once stopped believing in God.
Yeah.
And I know he is my creator and I know he has a purpose for me.
Yeah.
And I think that that helps with what is there to fear?
Mm.
There is nothing to fear.
Yeah.
I think he wants us to do this. Let's go.
Yeah.
And even some of the places we've been, it's like, we do what we're supposed to do. Yeah. We do our research. We try to make the best decisions we can. But at the end of the day, there is so much around every single one of us that we don't control.
Yeah.
But I know my creator does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So you guys saved. You were frugal to get to this point. You had retirement savings and stocks, I imagine. You also dabbled in real estate, right? That's mm-hmm. part of...
Yep.
What did you do real estate-wise that helps you do this?
So we have 3 homes in North Carolina and 2 in Arizona that are rented out.
Okay.
And we have property managers... I'm having a property manager.
Yeah, totally.
We started doing it ourselves at first. Yeah. And the day that we got the property manager, we're like, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that originally we thought, oh, maybe we'll sell a house every once in a while just to, because we have enough in savings for retirement. And this was just supposed to be to get us there.
Yeah.
So far the income has been enough to fund everything. So.
Cool. That's great. That's really cool. So you have this book coming out, The Rhythm of Everything. What inspired you to write a book after, you know, different kind of path through life? What was the spark for that?
It actually was just after COVID. We ended up back in the States after getting deported from Finland, which is a whole other story. But some things are fun. We ended up back in Phoenix and I knew we were going to be there about 7 months. And there's a church out there. Scottsdale Bible that wanted to take on foster care. It's a major issue in Phoenix and they needed somebody to help get the fundraising off the ground.
Okay.
So I took a job.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I remember that season that you,
yeah. Yep. So I spent 7 months with them and I loved it. I loved working with the people, but while working there, the idea for the book came to me and it just started percolating. And so when we took off after that, started traveling again, it took me, you know, the last 2.5 years to basically write it. I had notes all over the place and had a lot of research to do, but it just started from that and just seeing how there's a rhythm to everything. And there is a purpose, even sometimes if we don't know what that is. And I have a lot of examples in the book of how we can see rhythms in nature and things like that. And how, when we follow that, it brings abundance. And this is at the end of the book, I get to how that might bring abundance in our lives.
That's cool. So the book, it's about the interplay between science, nature, faith, how these things work together. What are some of those ways that you, or what is one way that you think following science, nature, faith brings abundance?
Well, I'll just start with nature because I think that is one thing most of Western culture, we see nature and we're amazed by it.
Yeah.
No matter where we believe it came from, nature is amazing. And one of the examples is Yellowstone. The beaver population, they used to have a huge beaver population. And the wolves were hunted to extinction and mysteriously the beavers started dying off too. And they ended up with 1 beaver colony left.
Wow.
And then this latest initiative where they brought wolves back, the beaver colony rebounded. And you wouldn't think that they're related, but basically it was the elk were eating. They weren't pressured by the wolves anymore. And so they stayed by the water and ate down all the willow trees that the beaver needed for their dam. So when the wolves came back, they put the herd pressure back on. They restored the rhythm that nature has. The ecological system is so codependent and everything needs each other. And it's this big rhythm. And I've seen on farms when they follow that natural rhythm, then they restore the land.
Yeah.
Alan Savory has done quite a few studies on restoring deserts. And it's just amazing how when you look, well, how does nature do it?
Yeah.
And you follow those rhythms, even if you don't understand what it's going to cause.
Yeah.
Whenever you remove something like wolves, you break other things that you don't even know you're going to break.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. I actually, about a year ago, I was in Lexington, Virginia, and there was a book. I was in this like small bookstore, and this guy was, it was all about beavers in this area of Virginia and how they'd been like basically pushed back and how it changed the ecology and what we were missing. And the guy that was there just happened to be super into this. And so he was talking about it. I was like, wow, something I never thought about in my whole life. And yet there's things that are missing when there aren't beavers in the world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
For people specifically, what do you think are, some of the things from nature that provide abundance for us when we follow those things, whether it's science, nature, faith, what are some of the things that you see for people?
Well, I start out the book with looking at the rhythms of nature and how it all flows, and we can learn that there's patterns to everything. And I even get into a little bit of chaos theory and how they've found patterns even in chaotic experiments. Yeah. There's patterns to everything. And then, you know, I get into the science of what they've discovered, what Alan Savory has discovered, and then get into the science and myths and things that we think are science that are myths of origins.
Mm.
And really, at the end of the day, whether you believe God created you or whether you believe in evolution, you believe it by faith.
Yeah.
And I get into where do the patterns of nature point us?
Yeah.
Well, they point us to design and that there's a creator. So if we can look at nature and we can say, okay, if we follow those designs, it brings abundance in nature. I wonder what his rules for our lives will do for our lives.
Yeah.
If he has a pattern to everything and his patterns show abundance, what will his patterns for our life be?
Yeah. Yeah. I think even just the idea of taking at least a day a week of real rest is huge, or seasons of Sabbath where it's like, okay, we're going to pull back in this season, from, you know, just go, 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 and how that, impacts us. And we had a season in life where we went back into a ministry in Japan and we were there to save it because it was like on the chopping block, you know, and worked
save
really
the ministry.
Yeah. Okay. Save the, you know, that was what we were thinking. That was what we were told and what we were thinking. And so I was like, you know, they were like, the last guy was never here, you know? So I was like in the office all the time, plus doing evenings and weekends, and burned out after a couple years of that kind of pace. And I told Jen in the middle of that, I said, I feel like I'm working, you know, 6 or 7 days a week and I'm getting 4 days worth of work done. Cause mm-hmm. I just, my energy just went off a cliff after a while. And now if I were to redo, so what I did at the time was I just started Wednesday afternoons. I started going to the beach cause I worked Wednesday nights. So I was like, okay, I'm going to, for 3 hours in the afternoon on Wednesdays, I'm going to go to the beach. We lived on the beach, so that was really easy. And now I would be way more drastic and I would get healthy. It took me like a whole year to get really healthy again. Because I just, things were out of balance, you know? Whereas now I'd be like, okay, making changes today and, you know, we're going to go in this direction. Or
it's a good point. And when we left corporate, I think it took me a year to regulate my sleep.
Yeah.
We don't follow our, we don't you know, following the patterns of your circadian rhythm.
Yeah.
And sleeping. We don't get enough sleep.
Yeah.
And it changes, and we don't get enough rest. We don't take enough downtime.
Yeah.
And yeah, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. I've really been trying. I mean, I'm 51 now. I've just this year really, I'm like, I try to sleep 8 hours a night, and usually it's 7 or 7.5, but a lot of times then I'll just lay in bed for an extra half hour or whatever. And, it has been nice. The nice thing when we were in Germany was our work day didn't start till 3 PM because we were still like working stateside hours, except on the Tuesday, Thursday ministry days. And that was a hard transition. I've been back about 2 weeks tomorrow, and I'm like, oh man, it was nice to spend like 8 hours before work really started.
Yeah.
But having to switch back to this. So one of the things that you've talked about is like in today's world, like we often are disconnected from nature, just modern lifestyle or whatever. Yeah. What do you see as some of the consequences of that?
I talk about a little bit about that in the book as well. There was a study done that Americans spend 97% of their time indoors.
Oh, wow.
So we are once removed from creation, from the beauty of nature. And what we see are what the created created.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, this is a beautiful home. This is, and I like climate control. I like to not be so cold. It's cold here right now.
Yeah.
But being outside, it's so different. We spent a year in Australia in a Toyota Coaster, and huge windows, no air conditioning. And we loved it because we felt like we lived outside, and just the breeze is calming.
Yeah.
The beauty, I think beauty is calming, and beauty fulfills us more so than we give it credit for.
Yeah.
And I think by being once removed, you're not getting all the fulfillment that's there for the taking.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the reasons I love this property is we have a 20-minute hiking trail around it. And I've been really bad since it's been like in the single digits. Yes. But a lot of the year I will do 2 or 3 of those laps a day. And I pointed out my desk where I work outside down by the river, and like the internet reaches down there. And so, just, I love getting that time. And I've read studies that when people just live across the street from a park or from green, they actually live a couple years longer, like just seeing the green regularly. Probably some of it is health, you know, connected to cleaner air and those kind of things. So, I absolutely love it. We built this room with these big picture windows so we could, you know, Jen and I usually start our day in the chairs looking out over the nature. And somehow she won this room. She works over there at the table, and I started to work here. She's like, we can't be working in like the living room and leaving our stuff on the desk. And then, I think she just wanted to get me out so she could, enjoy it. But, what do you think aligning your life with nature's rhythm looks like in practical terms, like day to day? What does that look like for you?
I think one of the things that I learned, so the book is not just, you know, the scientific findings. It has a lot of that, but it also has a lot of travel stories in it.
Yeah.
And so I talk about, just how everything is connected, and it starts with nature. Everything's connected. The cassowary needs the fruit needs the cassowary. And understanding that connection, we have a culture that's very individualistic.
Yeah.
And do it on your own, be independent. And I'm very much a product of my culture.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn how much we need connection.
Yeah.
Studies have shown that loneliness is as bad for your health as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Wow.
Like, that's pretty drastic. And we need each other. We need connections to each other, to nature, to its creator.
Yeah.
And I think that's I would say what we kind of learned is seeing, it's almost like nature is an illustration for us.
Yeah.
Let me show you connection. Let me show you beauty. And then, okay, let's do that in our lives. Let's build more connections. Let's build those relationships accept help from time to time. And that's very difficult, you know, to do.
Right. So. Totally. Yeah. I absolutely, I mean, this, that has been a huge thing. Like when I was in Germany, I would go to cafes and I was shocked. I didn't go to cafes as a kid all that much. As opposed to daily when I was there this last trip, because I was like, hey, they're here. I'm getting to experience this. But the thing that shocked me was the number of groups of men meeting, 3, 4, 5 men meeting together in a cafe, women meeting, couples meeting. And almost every time I went to a cafe, you know, sometimes I went with Jen or the kids, but sometimes, a lot of times I was alone and I was just going to work or grab a coffee. And there would be like one other one person table. And all the other tables were community and family and friends. And you guys have been to Christmas markets. And like in the bigger cities, yeah, it's like this big thing. But it, a lot of the smaller cities have them. And it's just friends grabbing food and grabbing Glühwein and talking. And they have these small villages. And I got to go to a Warm Hearts hot drinks party in a German village. And some of the people had lived there their whole lives and they're like, yeah, it's different now. Like not everyone lives in the village their whole life, but half of us still do, you know? Mm-hmm. And they still have community. Like I just loved going to the grocery store in our village and you get to know the people like this, you know, this, the grocery store is literally across the street. So a lot of times we just wouldn't shop. We'd just go there. But I just was so struck the community that exists in the way that they do life. And you go to Starbucks in America, everyone's on their laptop
by themselves.
They're alone. There's one or two tables with people together, you know, and everyone else is like alone. And yeah. Have you seen ways that people can create community in the States?
I think one of the huge things that we have forgotten here is the beauty of the living room.
Yeah.
And, that's one thing we learned on the road. We rarely ever go to hotels.
Yeah.
We go to Airbnbs and sitting there in somebody's home and just talking with them, you know, about how they live or the culture around them in their living room. You don't have all the distractions of everything around. You're not time boxed for your meal at a restaurant and you can sit there and you're in their home. It's personal.
Yeah.
And I think we have forgotten here the importance of the living room.
Yeah.
Every time we come back to the States between continents, we try to see all of our friends. And some we meet in a restaurant and you've got, you know, an hour to talk and that's it.
Yeah.
An hour is enough to catch up on some things that have happened.
Yeah.
When you go to somebody's home and you sit in their living room, you catch up on things and then you start talking about the real things in life.
Yeah.
And I think we've forgotten the living room. And I had a couple friends over during COVID. They recognized the living room because they couldn't go out. They started meeting each other's homes and like, our friendships are so much deeper.
Yeah.
Meet at home, spend an evening and talk about real things.
Yeah. We were in Thailand when COVID hit, so it was warmer, but we started just regularly meeting with people. Like what I was doing just totally crumbled. I was doing these businesses, missions, you know, conferences and events. Well, those were done. And we just started like having people in the front lawn. Like when it was like distancing, we literally were like, well, let's just sit in the front lawn. Cause we thought, okay, we're distanced. We're in the fresh air. We're going to be fine. And I think at the time people weren't even supposed to be meeting, but we're like, this is ridiculous. We're going to just meet outside, you know, and we did for a couple months, we did just meet people outside, you know, and but having that community, there are things, and I think about this all the time. Like, you know, I felt like this was our landing point in America and then we would buy an RV when the business could afford it and just go down the East Coast and go, where is the easiest place for community that we can connect with people? Mm-hmm. Because in, you know, we're in Virginia, but in the winter, I'm not saying hi to the neighbors, you know, where you just don't do that. There isn't the outside thing. And so we have pursued different avenues of community here. But as a culture, I think it's something people long for.
Yes.
Yeah, they just don't know how to achieve it. It's so easy to be entertained on our phones and devices.
And they disconnect us.
Yeah.
We'll run, you know, where we used to meet somebody and have a hug and now you like their post.
Yeah.
You know, there's over the phone, you don't get that personal. Even during COVID when people were in masks, I'm like, I want to see the whole facial expression.
Yeah.
You know, everything that we put between ourselves creates that distance. We need that connection.
Yeah. Jen was a teacher during COVID and they had to have masks on for like 2 years, I think. But the exception was if you were eating or drinking, you could pull down your mask. So she did, I think it was one day a week. She had a, she moved her refrigerator from her counseling office to the classroom. And she, one day a week, it was drink day and they could each like come in and get a drink so she could, you know, see their faces one day a week. But it, yeah.
Yeah, I learned to eat slower during COVID.
Yeah. So we've talked about nature. You've been to Antarctica. You've been to the rainforest. You've been to the desert. What were some of the like life-changing things for you in experiencing those different pieces of nature?
Life-changing. I don't know that I could pinpoint a place or a time for life-changing, but I think the overall journey has definitely been life-changing. And it happens a little at a time, just like all of our lives, a little at a time. And then we look and where are we now?
Yeah.
That's often how it happens.
And so what have been those little at a time changes for you?
I think the biggest thing is just experiencing nature around the world.
Yeah.
And the unbelievable beauty.
Yeah.
And the diversity, you know, the rainforest, and or even sometimes the similarities. You go to the Atacama Desert in Chile and the Sahara and different sand dune places, and they each have their own unique beauty.
Yeah.
But then there's a fingerprint that's similar in all of them across the entire globe.
Yeah.
And, you know, different jungles around the globe also have similarities. The Daintree in Australia and Amazon jungle, we found some similarities, some major differences, but also, you know, and seeing that and seeing how it's also one, it's one big ecological system.
Yeah.
It's not just, none of these systems are by themselves. They're all connected.
Yeah.
The Sahara actually feeds nutrients to the Amazon basin.
That's crazy.
The sands that come over. It's amazing how connected it all is.
So when you guys are traveling now around the States, do you still make stops like to see certain things in nature? And
We did 49 states before leaving to explore other continents. And so we always tried to take vacation while we were working and see the national parks and stuff. The last time and this time, most of our travel has just been to see friends.
Yeah.
Because we just want to see everybody again and spend time, and we've really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed nature. Even when we were at college in Clark Summit, I would often just go out to the lake and pray, or hike up to the mountain that was behind it, or whatever. But I have done that even more I guess I don't have kids that I'm like responsible for 24/7 now. So there's more freedom to do some of those things. But one morning in Germany, I had seen that it was going to snow in the night. It was going to stop snowing at 4:30. And then that day the temperature was going to get up, you know, like mid 40s. So I was like, oh man. And it's going to be the only time to see the snow. So I'm like, I hope I wake up early. I wasn't going to set an alarm. But I woke up at 4:30. I don't usually sleep with my phone in the room, but that night I did because I wanted to know what time it was. And I saw it was 4:30 when I woke up, and I'm like, okay. And I just went out and like had this amazing time in like 4 inches of fresh snow, and went to a castle and, you know, took pictures of the frosted trees and just enjoyed the beauty of God's creation with snow all over it, you know? Yeah. But even now, as we're talking, I'm like, I need to bring that a little bit back more into my life this year. Like we've made financial independence, community. We just joined a new church that's close to us. Our small group's only two blocks away. They meet every week. I'm part of a group of entrepreneurs that meets every week, but I think I'm going to add, because of this conversation, like some intentional nature things more into my life this year. So that's one of the takeaways for me from our podcast. So getting back to the Rhythm of Everything, what do you hope anyone, if you choose to buy the Rhythm of Everything, it'll be available when we launch this podcast, but what do you hope your readers take away from it?
Take a look at, so one of the things I bring up is chaos theory. And one of the things I found in chaos theory is initial conditions make a big difference in the trajectory of whatever happens.
Yeah.
And that's it. Lorenz was the one who discovered this, and he was a weatherman, you know, all this made a difference here. And so the weather went totally different. And my premise is what we believe makes a huge difference on the direction our life will go. Mm,
absolutely.
It might seem like just a little initial condition, but it affects our decisions and it'll affect our life. And my hope with this book is challenge your own basic beliefs. Mm. And I bring up some of the ones that you can challenge in that book and just challenge what it is you believe about humanity and about life. And I bring up some of those, challenge and at least recognize where your faith is. I think every single human has faith in something. Mm. Even if it's faith that we evolved and that there is no God, there is faith in that.
Yeah.
Every human has faith and every human worships.
Yeah.
Whether it drastically different things, but we all worship. And at least, at the very least, recognizing what your faith is in and challenging it.
Yeah.
And it could change your life.
Yeah.
But my desire for the book is that everyone find freedom.
Yeah. Cool. So last question, what habit or mindset across these last 8 years, or maybe through your life, has brought you the most fulfillment?
I think the mind, let's see, habit is a thing I'd like more of. It's challenging not having routine.
Yeah.
I love it, and there's challenges in it.
Yeah.
But I think the one habit I've been able to find is my morning routine.
Mm.
I like to get up. Trent, my husband, always makes fun of me because I say I'm not a morning person, and I'm not. It takes me at least an hour to know, like, don't ask me any important questions.
Yeah.
So I like to get up, have a cup of coffee and read, and just take quiet time in the morning to start out the day.
Yeah.
And I think it makes a big difference. When I was working on this book, it's very easy to get up in the morning, check Facebook, check this, check that.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it affected my attention span.
Mm.
So there was one month we had one place in Fez to just sit there and write. And I made myself not even touch my phone until evening.
Nice.
And I got up, did my morning routine, and it made a huge difference on my concentration.
Yeah.
Like, I should continue to do that.
Yeah.
Don't touch this social media stuff till evening. And studies have shown it does affect our attention. So
yeah,
set that aside.
Yeah, that's great. I don't like to start with my phone in the morning. I don't usually, but my job, like, I'm right in, you know, social media is part of my job.
Yes.
And I really, you know, so those are goals for me to get there of, like, yeah, it'd be nice not to open my computer or phone till, you know, late afternoon. And
I read on my computer, so the computer's open. I just try to stay off the social media.
Yeah. I actually have switched back to the Kindle because I found that I would get distracted and I wasn't reading as much. So I've gone back to physical books and Kindles as much as possible. And you know, sometimes I'll read on the phone. But, well, where can our listeners follow you? Where can they find the book? You know, how should they reach out if they desire to do so?
The blog for travel is the 43 Blue Doors, which you brought up. But if you want to sign up for updates on the book, when it's going to be released, right now the release date is March 10th. BonnieTruex.com, and you can go and you can sign up, and then I'll send out occasional emails. I don't send out a lot of emails. I know you're all busy. So yeah. You just get when there's something to say.
Okay, cool. Well, we will link those in the show notes as well. So 43bluedoors.com and Truex.com.
Yep.
Well, great having you on the podcast.
Thank you, Bonnie. Buddy. This has been fun.
Yeah, super fun. So,
BAM School, facilitating a global self-funding disciple-making movement through business. Thanks for tuning in to the BAM School podcast. Find show notes, free courses, resources, and more at 4BAM.com.